This podcast is sponsored by Finomatch, finding the most suitable donor with the matching tool for the best teams.
Hello, and welcome to the Fertility Conversations podcast. The goal of this podcast is to create more awareness about infertility and to provide support to people trying to conceive. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you will be encouraged. And now, here is your host, Ola.
Welcome to another episode of the Fertility Conversations. Today, we're joined by a lovely guest, a lady who I really love and admire, Lisa Schumann, and she's a leading expert in family building. She runs workshops and offers counseling for parents and children who have formed their families through sperm and egg donation or adoption. In her many years of treating patients who need assistance to build their families, Lisa came to understand that guidance, support, and education she provided could make their path to parenthood easier. To fill that need, in 2015, she founded the Center for Family Building, a trusted comprehensive resource offering products, videos, coaching services, support programs, and much more. Ms. Schumann is now also the co-author of the newly released book, Building Your Family, and she joins us today to tell us more about her journey to parenthood and about the inspiration behind her book and the Center for Family Building. So welcome, Lisa, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Ola. I really appreciate being here and seeing you and appreciate all your support. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. I love you. So to start off, we usually say, tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I've been in the fertility industry for decades, more than two decades now. And through my years of working in the fertility industry, I've learned so much. And I found that people would continually say to me, Lisa, you're telling me these things that I've never heard before. I don't really understand how come people aren't talking about that. And so it started to bother me. I run workshops for donor-conceived children. I've seen thousands of donors and recipients and all sorts of patients going through surrogacy and fertility journeys. And I thought, you know what? I really need to put this in a book. And so I decided to put this book together. And as you know, I have a podcast as well, Donor Conception Conversations, which will soon be, by the time this airs, changed. We're going to transform ourselves to Building Your Family because a lot of people have said that they want to hear more about surrogacy and more about fertility treatment. So we're going to include that this year because, of course, no one is just one thing. So we're going to include all of those aspects of the fertility journey as well. And my goal really is to help people have a better path to parenthood. That's really what makes me happy.
Wow. Thank you so much, Lisa. And thank you for all that
you're welcome.
Do. Because if, like you said, it makes a huge difference in the journey if you have someone to hold your hand while navigating your journey.
Yeah, and to give you education, because I think a lot of people go down a path and there are things that they just have never thought about, as I said. And it's so important to be educated. If you're not educated, these are all decisions that can't be unwound, right? Like choosing a donor, what path to choose. We were talking about embryo donation versus embryo adoption. We're talking about fertility treatment. Any of these choices that you make as you move down this road, we want to be able to make as straight a path as possible. It's a roller coaster that everybody goes through and it's filled with emotions and it's very hard to think clearly. So it's important to make sure you have the right guidance.
Definitely. Thank you. And of course, like you said, we were speaking just before we started recording about embryo. I said embryo adoption. And of course, you wanted to let me know why it actually is called embryo donation. So could you please tell us a little bit about that before you speak about your own journey?
Yes. So I think it's really important for everyone out there to understand. I know there's a lot of people talking about embryo adoption and how they work with embryo adoption companies, but it's a very different process. So in our country, there are many people who believe that life begins at conception. And then in science, we don't believe that. We believe that an embryo has the possibility of becoming a baby, but is not necessarily a child yet. right? It's a ball of cells, and we know that it has a possibility of a lot of things. There's been discussions about stem cell research and all sorts of things that we can do. And so we really don't think about that embryo as a person yet. But for people who are very religious or very conservative minded, they may think of that embryo as a person. So for them, they believe that in order to receive the embryo, you should adopt it, which means that in the US, you're going through an entire adoption process. You need to fill out all the adoption paperwork. You need to go through the home study. You do all of that. And of course, unfortunately, because this is also a very conservative group of people who are putting these groups together, there is a bias. There's no single people. You have to be straight. You can't be a heterosexual couple. You can't be anything that defies, the Catholic doctrines. And so you really need to follow all of those paths in order to adopt the embryo. And then once you've adopted the embryo, they are able to accumulate this information to help support their personhood legislation, to try to help them advance personhood in the US, which of course is going to destroy our industry. So I'm, as you can imagine, not really a fan of embryo adoption. It might be for some people, it's certainly not for me and for the people that I speak with. On the other hand, there's some great embryo donation groups. There are fertility clinics that do embryo donation. Empower with Moxie is a great group online that's on social media that we talked about earlier. There are other groups that do this as well that help people donate their embryos. And it's a wonderful option for a lot of people, particularly people for whom the process has become very expensive because you have an embryo that's already created. And so the embryo is created and they need to decide what to do with this embryo. And they don't want to discard the embryo. They want to give the embryo to another family. And so you have this opportunity to have a child potentially without having to pay the cost of an egg donor or the sperm donor or the lab costs. It's much less expensive. And also very often, not always, but very often in these arrangements, you can choose an open option, which you can't always do in a clinic. And so, as we know in the US, most egg donation programs in the US are closed. They're not open programs. And the embryo donation programs are not open mostly in the US as well. But there are a lot of groups that do open donations. So there are a lot of different choices for embryo donation. And it's a wonderful option for a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. And when you say open, what does that mean? Open.
So open meaning that or directed, we use the term directed. The American Society for Reproductive Medicine uses the term directed. I use open just because I think for most people, that's something that the term that they can relate to. But it means that you have the opportunity to either meet the donors or to be able to have a relationship with the donors, to be able to perhaps get more medical information, to develop some sort of connection, potentially to have your children have a relationship. So there are varying degrees of openness and relationships that are possible. Mm-hmm. And so those things can happen if you move forward with a group that does allow for that. As I said, some clinics do not, but right. There are many places that do. And so it really depends upon where you go. I also wanted to mention, and I mentioned this a little bit earlier in actually yesterday on the podcast, that it is very difficult also, I think, for people who want to use donated embryos, but for whatever cultural or racial reasons, they have fewer choices, right? So if you're a person of color or if you have a particular cultural background that you want to have a specific type of donor, you may be more limited, right? You may not have those options. And so I know it's really important and we all advocate for openness, but I also think we need to be realistic because it's not always possible. So you need to do the best you can for yourself and your family, and hopefully you'll be able to connect with that donor at some point if they're willing to be connected with. And you know, we don't know if everyone's open to that, if all the people who donated the embryos are open to it. I've met several who were not. So it really depends. But it's worthwhile looking at it as an option because it really can be a beautiful way to build your family.
Yes, thank you for sharing, Lisa. And I think it's important, like
You're
you said,
welcome.
having that option, knowing that is an option is great, because then you can consider
Yes.
it with your partner if you have one, or if you're single, you can then decide how to move forward and have informed decisions and make the informed decisions, because it's so important to know, because oftentimes we can make decisions without even knowing all the options are available.
Yes.
So
Yes.
yes, you might not opt for open donation, but then you might if you knew that it was available, because
Yes.
again, like you said, there are possibilities for potential children that might be born out of the embryo donation to connect with other potential siblings that already exist or might exist in the near future. So again, knowing that the option exists is important. And that's why it's important to have education and awareness so people know what's available and can then make a decision. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I think, again, it is using the right terminology is important. Again, so knowing the right terminology to use, because again, it's such a big difference. So from your explanation, embryo donation and embryo adoption are totally different. They're not the same thing
yes.
at all. So
yes, correct.
It's good to know that. So what got you into all of this, Lisa? What was your fertility journey like, or your journey to parenthood? Please share as little or as much as you'd like to share, and let's see how you got into this space.
Well, I'm an open book, and I talk a lot about it in Building Your Family, in the book that we discussed
yes.
that was just recently
yes,
published.
Yes, recently published,
yes.
Yay.
Thank you.
I have
thank
my
you.
copy.
Yes, oh, great. Well, thank you very much for purchasing it. And it's available, as you know, in Amazon or Amazon
yes.
UK. It's available on audio, so you can download it. And it's, you know, well, hopefully will help a lot of people. So I talk about my journey. And for me, I had a difficulty that no longer exists, fortunately, in the US, because women who were born, young children who were born from mothers who took this specific medication in the 60s, developed problems ranging from deformed uteruses to cancer and all sorts of other issues. And so my mother took that medication with me. It was meant to be taken to prevent miscarriage, and she had a miscarriage before I was born. So her doctor prescribed her this medication, and she took it when she was pregnant with me. So my two sisters after me did not have this problem, but I had it. And it, because of it, sometimes you can't get pregnant. Sometimes you have problems getting pregnant. I was able to get pregnant, but I always miscarried because I was not able to maintain a pregnancy. My uterus is the size of, you know, a baby's uterus. It was deformed. And so it never really grew fully. And I've had all sorts of other issues as a result of that. And so I underwent multiple fertility treatments, because some people do get pregnant and remain pregnant with this condition, and sometimes your uterus can stretch a bit. So I had multiple surgeries, and my husband had surgeries, and we did every kind of treatment available. We did Chinese medicine, we did immunotherapy, which was very popular back then. We did all kinds of treatment, and then we went through the surrogacy process, which at the time on the East Coast was not really well developed. And on the West Coast at the time, it was pretty standard. And so people could expect that their surrogacy contracts would be reliable. At the time on the East Coast, the surrogates still were not that familiar with it, and things kept on changing. And we had a lot of problems with multiple surrogates. And so then we gave up on that process and then went back to the drawing board and decided to adopt our children. I went through that process, and then we had many failures in that process as well. We had many times where we had a child and then the birth mom took the child back. So we had many, many difficulties on that road as well. So at the end of all of it, we were able to raise three children, and all through this process. Yes. And so all through this process, I was a therapist going through fertility treatment myself. And one of the doctors that I went to thought that I might want to change. I had analytic training, and I had also had a license in substance abuse and all sorts of other treatment programs. I ran a family program for a while. And so I was trained a long time ago, maybe 30 years ago, did some training through the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. And I had a lot of great mentors at the time and decided that I would be committed to working in this field and helping other people. So I decided to do that a long time ago and never turned back. I love what I do and I love to help people. And that's really what fills my cup.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What a journey you had.
Yes. A long journey. Yes, it was a long journey. So I understand how hard it can be. And I understand, I mean, treatment is very different now than it was, mm-hmm. you know, 25 years ago or 30 years ago. It's a very different, we used to do things very differently than we do now. So treatment is certainly better, but the emotions involved in the disappointment and the loss and the struggles are still there. That has not changed. It's still a very, very difficult process for most people. And there's still a lot that needs to be changed. There still needs to be a lot more awareness. Women go to their gynecologist and we still don't have the ability at 25 to hear from our gynecologist, what are you going to do about your family planning, right? Yeah. That still does, those conversations still don't happen enough. We learn in our school, in our health class, how to not get pregnant and what the biology of our reproductive system looks like a little bit, but nobody talks about reproductive health and aging eggs and all of those other things that we need to be having conversations about. And so women still start very often in the game too late, and then they are saddled with the difficulty of making a decision between continuing to date, or should they pursue parenthood, or should they continue treatment, or should they not continue treatment? And they're fighting that biological clock, and it's really stressful. Yes. And that happens in many different relationships in different ways. In lesbian couples, that very often they're not educated enough about it, and so sometimes they just move ahead with one partner, get pregnant, and they don't think about that the other one might want to get pregnant as well at some point. Mm-hmm. And you know, and for young families who are going through this, or young couples that are going through this, they don't really think it's going to take a long time, and so they're really not planning, what am I going to do if this doesn't work? And so, you know, there's so many things that we really need to think about. Same thing with egg freezing. People will freeze their eggs, and sometimes they don't freeze enough eggs, or they put too much confidence in it, and it's not a guarantee. So there are a lot of things that people really need to be educated about, and we're not there yet.
No. Well, thanks to you and many others, you keep helping to educate and raise awareness and let people know about options and to get ready or prepare earlier. And of course, like you said, we need more conversation with our youth to help them to, you know, get a head start in the planning process. Of course, you noted that you're a therapist even during your journey. How did you find support going through all that you went through in your journey?
Well, I've been in therapy forever. It was just part of my analytic training to go into analysis myself and to be in therapy myself. And so I've had every type of individual and group therapy and all of that. And so I had my own support through my fertility journey as well. And I recommend it for everyone, of course.
Right. How did the journey change you?
Oh, so many ways. I mean, I see things very differently, as I think most women do. I couldn't imagine having a journey that would be different than the one I imagined, right? I thought I was going to be pregnant. I thought I was going to be carrying a baby that was genetically connected to me. And in truth, I was not. A lot of women struggle with a genetic connection. It wasn't so hard for me to let go of a genetic connection as it was to let go of being pregnant, because that was something for me I really wanted. It was to be pregnant and to have that experience of being pregnant. And so that was a bigger loss for me. And everyone's different. Some people feel it's more important to carry, and some people feel that they feel more connected to their genetics. For me, it was really carrying a pregnancy that I felt that I had to grieve over even more than losing my genetics. And so that's really my issue. It's not my kids' issue. It's not about them. I love my children. They're still my children. But that was something for me that I had to come to terms with and make peace with myself.
Right. Thank you for sharing. And I love the fact that, you know, you highlighted before about the importance of therapy while going through your journey and how it helped you. Do you recommend that for everyone? Is there a difference between therapy and counseling? And at what stage in our journeys should people be considering either?
Well, I think it's very important to see someone who understands this process. Right. And I think there are a lot of people out there who have their own personal fertility journeys, and then they want to help other people. And that's great. Right. But I think that it's really important that your therapist has gone through the ASRM training at the very least. At the very least, right. There participated in working on the educational modules for the American Society for Reproductive Medicine's mental mm-hmm. health professional group. And those training modules are very important. They're basic 101 learning about what you need to know about fertility treatment. And so even though some people want to counsel other people just based on their own experience, I think that that really does not help their clients. I think they really need to have professional training. And I also think they need to attend meetings like the American right. Society for Reproductive Medicine, go to the national meetings, because in those meetings, you're not going to just learn about counseling issues, but you're going to learn about the new technologies and what's happening. So you know what your patients are going through, what's coming around the bend, and what sorts of issues are going to come up in their lives, whether they're legal or ethical or having to do with the medicine. Mm-hmm. So those are all very, very important things. So I think that everyone should really take stock in making sure that if they're getting support, they're getting the right support.
Right. Thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
I think that's really important. It's really important because I went through a lot of counseling as well. I mean, during when I experienced losses, and I found it really helpful. And I think it's really important that people understand the mental impact on the mental health while going through fertility journeys or losses. So thank you
yes.
coming from you as a specialist, also highlighting the importance. I think it's really helpful for people to know that.
You're welcome.
And of course, after going through your journey, you then decided to start the Center for Family Building. What was the inspiration for that?
Yes. So I worked both in-house. I was on site at three fertility clinics, a small fertility clinic, and then for a decade at a very large fertility clinic in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I moved to what is now Illume Fertility. I was director of mental health services there and also for their program called Gay Parents to Be. And so I did that for almost a decade. And all the while I was doing that, I had my private practice, which was the Center for Family Building, and it was a small group practice at the time. And I was very happy about the things that I was able to accomplish. I did a lot of research, particularly when I was at the New York City clinic. And then I did on egg freezing and some other subjects, and did a lot of research on LGBTQ parenthood and some other issues like surrogacy that I felt were really important. And then we developed an open donor program. There's no, as far as I know at the time, and it's even now, I don't think there are any other open donor programs on the East Coast. So I was very happy to do that. And we developed an embryo donation program. And so I kind of ticked the boxes of kind of my wish list.
Yeah.
And now it's time for my next chapter. And so I'm putting all of my time and energy into my own group practice, the Center for Family Building, because I want to help people as many in as many ways as possible. So I have my podcast, I have the book, I have my website with lots of information, and I have my counselors providing counseling, individual and group. And so that way, however you like to get help in any of those ways, because people are all different. Sometimes people like to listen to books, sometimes people like to read the paper books. So I really tried to reach out to people in every way possible so that people can get good information.
Thank you. And for anyone that wants to
Mm-hmm.
reach out to you to find out how they can be supported, what's the best way to reach you?
You can go to my website. It's familybuilding.net, and it's a website with lots of information on it. You can also follow me on Instagram or Facebook or YouTube. The website has lots of information about all of those things on it, but you can find me on social media too, TikTok, any of those, and certainly subscribe to the podcast. It's called Building Your Family. So I would love that as well. So all of those places are great.
Right. And so far, I mean, I know that you're making some changes, like you said before, previously, so far, your podcast is focused on donor conception.
Yes.
Why did you choose that area?
So I've my book is about donor conception, and we do a lot of work on it on my team with donor conception. That's very important, and very important because not only is this is an important process for people in their lives, but there's so much that's changing in the field, and people really need to be educated about it. And so I really started focusing on it as I did in my book. And yet many people find, just like we all do, that when we go through our fertility journeys, it's never about one thing. And so I've had a lot of requests for episodes on surrogacy and episodes
Right.
on stress management and episodes on other things. And so we've decided to change the podcast and morph into the same name as my book, Building Your Family. And that way I can help more people with more subjects apart from donor conception.
And that'd be great because, again, you know, everyone reaches their parenthood status in different ways. And there's so many options now. So you just never know. I listened to your recent podcast, actually, with Camille, the actress, and that was amazing. Listening to her, and she highlighted so many questions that people that might be exploring donor conception face and wonder about. So it was great to listen to her and let her share her fears and express that many of the fears she had at the beginning are not things that actually exist now. So it was great to hear that.
Yeah. Camille Guadi, for any of you who don't know, she's on a show called Duster on HBO Max. And she's a terrific actress, and she's also the first actress to come out as being a mother of a donor-conceived child. As we know, in this world, there are a lot of people who talk about getting pregnant through IVF, and we suspect that maybe they use donor eggs because they're getting pregnant in their 50s, and of course, they don't need to tell anyone in the world, but the difficulty for many people is that then they look at them and say, well, what about me? I'm 50. Why can't I do that? I went to the same doctor. I did everything with that person did to get pregnant. And how come I can't get pregnant at 50 with my own eggs? And so there is a misconception about reproductive aging, and not enough people know about it. People think you can kind of will yourself out of it. And, you know, just like our hair gets, you know, gray over time, there's nothing we can do about it, no matter how healthy and strong and fit we are, our eggs are going to get old. Time is not kind to people who have eggs and ovaries. And so we really need to think about that, unfortunately. And she talked about all of those things, about how difficult it was for her to come to terms with this, and how she decided to use donor conception, how she had to make peace with not using her genetics, and was very open about it, and has been open about it. In public, she even was interviewed in People magazine and decided to talk about it openly, which I give her an enormous amount of credit for. No celebrity has done that yet. So I was very happy to have her discuss it on the podcast as well. We have a two-part podcast with her discussing her journey, and it's fantastic. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much. I'm going to put the link for your website and the podcast and, of course, your Instagram so people can reach out and listen to episodes as well on your podcast.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. In one of the many aspects or concerns that people speak about when thinking of donor conception is, should they tell the child or children? Will that change anything in their relationship? Should they tell family members? Would family members be accepting of that child or children? Will they be mean to them? In your opinion, any information you'd like to share or advice from your own perspective and experience so far?
So we're in a place in society right now where we don't all accept donor conception, right? We live in this bubble where we accept it, but there are people in our lives very often who don't accept donor conception, right? It's going to affect their inheritance. It's going to affect their relationships with their grandmother, who would be destroyed if she knew that her grandchild was not Irish like she was, because she came to this country and is so proud of her Irish heritage. I talk about a story in my book about my child's teacher's assistant teacher, who had some things to say about my children and my relationship with them, because we're not genetically connected. And she was a lovely person. She didn't mean to be hurtful, but this was part of her culture. And so I think that people who go through this process know that it is so demoralizing to start, right? We all feel terrible about ourselves. We feel terrible about our bodies. We feel damaged. We feel broken. And the worst thing in the world, I think, and maybe the kind of the backlash from all of this openness, the openness is great, but the backlash has been a lot of pressure on women to do things perfectly, to have the perfect story for their child, to do everything perfectly. And I think that we're all human and we all need to process this experience in our own way. You're going to love your child. You're going to be a great parent to your child. You're going to do everything that you can for them. People do that, right? There's more money spent on parenting accessories, equipment, toys than there is on almost any industry, because people spend more on their children than they will on themselves, right? People love their children. And so if they know that this is how their children are going to feel more integrated, how their children are going to feel like they have better self-esteem, how the children are going to feel connected, more connected to them, eventually they will be able to absorb that, as hard as it is for them, and share this information with their children. We see research shows us time and again that two issues come up over and over. One is if the child learns accidentally, and if the child secondly learns late in life. So we don't want either of those things to happen. Ideally, if we can try to ensure that the child understands from day one that the parents are practicing in utero, they're practicing in the crib, they're getting comfortable with the conversation, and the baby grows up knowing this as part of their life, that is really the ideal situation. Beyond that, do you need to talk to your classroom teacher who's going to be hurtful? No. Do you need to talk to your mother-in-law who's going to give you a hard time and not include you in the will? No. If people are going to hurt you or hurt your child, they don't need to know. You don't owe them anything. I think that your child can decide as they get older if they want to share it or not. And you only share with people who you know are going to be accepting. You need to protect yourself and protect your children. And I think that that is primary. And those other people, by the time your child gets older, if your grandmother, your Irish grandmother is 70 now, she's going to be 75 before the child starts talking about it. And by then, she probably won't care. So I think it's better to take the pressure off yourself, because that pressure prevents people from moving forward, right? Yeah. Lots of women in particular have so much self-recrimination and feel so badly about themselves already. And then this pressure to tell the grandmother puts them even further behind and makes them delay parenthood even further, because they feel so guilty about it. They feel so afraid. And I think we need to wash that fear away and embrace our families, embrace our children, and embrace the family that we're creating, our partners, if we have them. And we need to feel like we have a very close tie and we are connected to the people who care about us most. I talk a little bit in the book even about what I do with parents-to-be sometimes, coming up with some sort of rule list for themselves and starting to think about, you know, who they're going to share with, who they're not going to share with it, and who they're going to tell, who they're going to talk to, and under what circumstances, and what their dialogue is going to look like, and what sorts of language they're going to use. If, let's say, you're in a gay couple and one person's going to be called dad and one's going to be called papa, and that's important to you, that you share that with your family members. All of these things that are important to you, you've worked so hard to build your family, I think really need to be taken seriously. And you can even decide that you want to make, you know, this letter or this email that you're going to put out to your friends and family, so everybody kind of knows what's important to you and what you want to share and what you don't want to share. You don't want, you know, your mother-in-law to get on Facebook and, you know, tell the whole world, right? Maybe you don't want her to do that, or maybe you don't care, right? It's everybody's different and everything has to be respected. The one universal truth, I think, is that the child needs to know. Wow. But everybody else has to have, make their decisions based upon their own families.
Really great advice, Lisa. Thank you. That really helps, because
you're welcome.
It is such a great way, and I think it can be such a relief for many people. I live in Nigeria, and oftentimes people have concerns of telling those family members, like you said, maybe the grandmother, grandfather, father-in-law, brother-in-law, yeah, sister-in-law, whoever the case may be, have concerns about expressing that information too. So it's important to know that they can feel a little less stressed and say, yes, well, you know, focus should be on themselves and their children. As long as the children are aware, then with time, like you said, people will see the love that you all share and be okay with whatever information they find out in the future. But I think that helps people to move forward, because there's so many people stuck in, yes, the how do I tell them? What if they know this? Do they need to know that? How much do I need to tell them? But
yeah,
like I said, it's the child or children and within that family that matters the most in terms of having that amount of openness.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought it up, Ola, because I do think that there are a lot of women who are secretly suffering, yeah, out there, and they see these people on the internet saying, you know, this is what you have to do. And there's this, like, you know, finger wagging at them, you, exactly, know, in their mind, that you have to tell the whole world. If you don't tell the whole world and everybody, and put in the newspaper and tell everybody in the PTA and tell everybody at your religious school and, yeah, tell everybody, you know, if you don't do that, you're a bad person and you feel so terrible. Yeah. And you start to feel even worse. And here you are coming off the heels of fertility treatment where you're already feeling badly and damaged, exactly, and defective, and you're barely kind of recovering from that. And now you have to be in this place where you feel all this pressure when you know it's going to be terrible for you, terrible for the child. So I really think that, yes, you know, this, the one universal truth is, of course, the child has to know. Beyond that, everybody has to make a decision based upon their own situation, their own family. And if the child knows that you're not ashamed, right? We talk about the difference between shame and privacy, and secrecy.
What's the difference?
Is about,
sorry, Lisa.
Yeah, so the secrecy is about shame, right? I'm ashamed of something, and so I have to keep the secret, versus I'm private about certain things. And everyone is entitled to their privacy, right? Some people are soapbox people. They like to get up and tell the world everything. And some people are more private people. I run this workshop for donor-conceived children called Tip Top. And part of it is about understanding who you are. We do all sorts of activities to help the children understand their story and how they came into the world. And we do lots of, like, activities to kind of demonstrate it. But we also help them understand themselves. And we all need to respect ourselves, right? The kid who is very introverted, you don't want to force them to try to be somebody they're not, to be an extrovert, right? It's not right. And the same thing, you have to have the same respect for yourself. If you are a certain type of person, if you're a more private person, you don't need to share every single detail with every single person in the Girl Scout troop. It's not necessary. Yeah. So you need to decide what's important for you and your family or not, and what is going to be true for you and helpful for you. And feeling ashamed of not telling, you know, your grandmother or not telling your teacher because you think that she's going to have some, you know, terrible reaction or treat your child differently is protecting yourself and your child.
Yeah.
You, that's what you need to do. So I think we all have to feel empowered to make those decisions that are good for us and our family and try our best, even though it's hard, not to feel shamed by all of these people who are kind of on the internet wagging their finger at us saying things have to be done a certain way.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad I brought up that question. And I'm glad you highlighted that and shared your advice on that. Because again, oftentimes what you see on the internet is the exact opposite. And that advice on the internet doesn't take into account the fact that people live in different societies and cultures. And so just saying blanket openness to everyone doesn't take into the fact that that person needs to live in that environment every day. They have to deal with whatever people are going to show them based on what they've opened up to them about. They could treat them really bad for the next 18 years. Who wants to live with that and that kind of mental health space? It doesn't take into account people's uniqueness.
The other thing that happens, and, you know, what I've seen happen over, you know, the decades, and I see these children that I see grow up and their experiences, is that you have kind of two other dilemmas within the family. And one is, let's say you tell your teacher who, let's say, is culturally different or old-fashioned, and you tell your teacher, this child is genetically linked to this parent.
Right.
You use an egg donor or a sperm donor or your same-sex couple. This is what you tell them. You run the risk of the teacher looking at that child as being just like everybody always says, oh, he looks just like his mom, right? It's a natural inclination to do that. So if you say this child is genetically connected to this parent, you know, you have to know that there is a chance that this teacher might say, oh, well, Johnny's musical and you're musical, therefore that makes sense, right? Or that maybe they're looking for him to be musical because you're musical.
Right.
So what is that? What does that do? Two things, potentially. One is that it really puts Johnny in a corner because the teacher's always looking for him to be musical. Maybe Johnny's athletic. Maybe he's not musical, right? So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that the other parent starts to feel left out, right? The other parent starts to feel like, what am I, chopped liver? Like, I'm not, you know.
Where do I belong here?
Right. Where do I belong? And, you know, everybody's talking about Johnny and his mom and how they're so much alike and they're so musical. And it starts to make me feel bad because I'm the parent too, and I'm contributing as a parent, and I don't feel like I mean anything here.
Yeah.
So I think you really have to take, you know, you can only take educated guesses. People are going to say hurtful things sometimes and you can't prevent it all the time. But if you know from the outset that someone has very strong negative opinions about donor conception, then why put yourself in that sort of situation where both Johnny could be kind of pigeonholed into being a certain way and where your partner is going to feel really badly.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important to kind of think about these things. It's going to happen, but if you can minimize the damage, I think it's much better because you're going to have those moments where the people who do know are still going to hammer you with questions, right? And if you got pregnant by yourself, nobody's going to say, you know, what time did you have sex to get pregnant? But because you went through this process, people are going to ask you about the donor. Where'd you find the donor? And how do you know that they're mentally stable? And, you know, they're going to ask you a million questions, and it's really difficult. So if you're not built for that, then minimize that. You know, if that's not who you are and you don't want to be out in the world answering those questions a million times a day, because it will happen as you get older. People don't think about that at the beginning because they have friends and family around them who support them and who love them and who are rooting for them because these are the people you choose to have in your universe. But soon your children are going to grow, right? They're going to be involved in, you know, soccer, and they're going to be involved in music class, and they're going to be involved in all sorts of activities where you're going to see other parents, where you're going to be involved in other community activities. And you're going to be faced with lots of people you don't know, who you haven't chosen to be in your personal space, right. And they may have reactions to this. So I think it's important to kind of choose wisely and, you know, just reduce the damage potentially that you might have to deal with, and really be honest with yourself and your partner about how you feel and what's going to be important to you, because also you don't want to be arguing with your partner, right? You don't want to be fighting about this. You don't want to be unprepared and then, you know, get cornered in the dairy department in the supermarket by, you know, some woman who's, you know, in the PTA who's asking you a million questions. You're caught off guard. You start saying things you don't feel like saying, and then you feel terrible, and you go home and you're, you know, your partner's saying, why did you say that? And then you say, I know, I felt so bad. I shouldn't have said this, or I wish I had said that differently. It's better to have these conversations up front with your partner and make the decisions about who you want to share with and who you don't want to share with, and how you're going to manage these questions when they come at you.
Right. Well said, Lisa. Thank you so much for sharing. And so you suggest that we should have those conversations, if possible, before even a while embarking on that journey, you should be having those conversations.
Yes, I think.
Yeah, as a couple.
Yes. Yes. So I think the first thing is to have the conversation about how you want to discuss it with your child. And we can, you know, there's lots of nice, and I have an episode on my podcast about disclosure to your child, and the four steps I think are important to factor into it. So I think it's important to think about how to incorporate these different ideas into your narrative for your child, and to practice that and get comfortable with it, but also and as you're practicing it, you'll get more comfortable, but also to decide together, who do we feel comfortable sharing this with, and how much are we going to share? Are we going to say, you know, there's no dad in the picture? Are we going to say, if you're a single parent, let's say, or are you going to say, I use donor conception, this is the sperm bank I use, this is the I mean, how much do you really want to share in these situations?
Right.
And at some point, then it will be the child's story to share or not to share. And your child will have to make that decision if they want to share with other people. You can also say to people, if they are inquisitive about the donor, particularly in a known donor situation, you could also decide that you want to leave that up to the child. You can say, you know, this is my child's story to share or not to share about their donor and who they're genetically connected to. And as they get older, if they want to share that with you and you're in their life, I'm sure they will. And let your child make that decision.
Great advice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So many aspects to consider. So really knowing, being educated is important. So
yes,
having important. The right support is important, because oftentimes you might not even consider some of these things before getting into the journey.
Yes, right. And we talk a lot about this in the book, and my co-author has donor conceived children, and he's a gay man who, he and his partner went through a fertility journey that was different, similar to mine, but also different in a lot of ways. And so we talk about both of our experiences about how we went through our fertility process and how we manage having children who are not genetically connected to us. Right. And I think that it's really important for people to kind of think through these things ahead of time, so they don't feel caught off guard later. And so they can also prepare for sharing this with their child.
Right. Your book. Yes, I read a bit about your story in your book and about your co-author as well. So of course you have Center for Family Building. You started the podcast and then the book. Why did you decide to co-author this book? Why did you feel we needed this book?
Well, because so many things that I talk about, like I'm talking about now, mm-hmm. I talk about with patients every day, and they very often will ask me, how do I get more information about this subject? Mm-hmm. And there really wasn't a lot out there that I felt was important to be out there. And so I just decided I'm going to put it all in a book. And, you know, as I said, I really want people to feel educated and to have the right information. And so I try to educate as many people as I can. And in this next chapter of my life, I've been through you know, as I mentioned, multiple working in house in multiple well-known fertility clinics, some of the best in the world. And I've done some research, and I testified before the State Senate Judiciary Committee to legalize surrogacy in New York. So I've done some really exciting things in my career. And I decided, you know, now this chapter is all about educating as many people on as wide a scale as possible. So I've got the book, I've got the podcast, I have my website, there's counseling, there's groups. I do, you know, what I can. I've got video programs to try to give people the right information in the way that they want to receive it.
What an amazing legacy, Lisa.
Thank you.
Thank you. I love the book. I've got a couple of chapters and I really love it. And it's so, like you said, so much information, so much education. I learned, you know, from your co-author, like you noted, you might call one person a parent if you're a same-sex couple. You might call one parent papa and the other parent dad. Like that, I had no idea. You know, so many aspects of different people's journeys, single mothers by choice, and reasons why people might even hesitate or decide to proceed or not. So many stories, so many paths to parenthood. And I think that your book was definitely well needed. And I'm glad that I'll be able to get my own copy. And of course, I got mine on Amazon. I know Amazon also has a Kindle version for people that might not be able to have it shipped, but are there other places where people can get the book?
Well, we also have Barnes & Noble and lots of booksellers in the US that offer the book, but we also have it on Audible. So I narrated the book and my co-author narrated a couple of chapters. So if you're the sort of person who likes to listen to your books while you're emptying the dishwasher or folding your laundry, you can listen on Audible. Just download it, the book on Audible, and there you go.
Well, that's pretty cool. I'd love to try that out, actually. Mm-hmm. It can make it so different, right?
I read a lot of books that way.
Oh, really? It's like a podcast almost, but the whole book.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. I think I read like 75 books last year that way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just like, you know, in walking the dog or emptying the dishwasher a little bit here and there. You just can't, they add up.
Yeah. And I think the book focuses on, again, different aspects. I think sometimes it's important to be able to read other people's stories, just like the podcast, but read other people's stories and see what they explored. Because sometimes you might not even consider an option or even know it exists until you read about somebody else's story. And then you think, okay, I could do that. Or that sounds like an option for me. And then you can explore it.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely.
So well done.
Thank you so much.
Because it just seems like it, like going through your own journey, and then you know, I decided to use all your experience, get more education, and then support so many people. Like you keep giving back continuously. Your Instagram page is amazing. Of course, your podcast, I've listened to many episodes, and of course, not reading your book. Thank you. It takes a lot of passion and dedication to keep doing all that you're doing. And wanting to be to support more people and to provide advice, to provide support, to provide education, awareness, things that could make a huge difference in other people's journeys. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you, Ola. You do so much for so many people as well. I love following you on Instagram and watching all of your stories. You provide a lot of great information as well. So thank you too.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
You're welcome.
Before we wrap up, if you could go back to 20-year-old Lisa, knowing all that you know now, what will you tell her?
Well, I think that I would tell her what I would tell most young people is that time is not kind to people with ovaries. And so we all need to, now my issue was not about aging eggs. I had a uterine problem, but it's really important to make sure that everything is okay when you're young. And when I went to the gynecologist says, yeah, did an internal exam. They said, I'm sure you're fine. They didn't really think of doing, you know, an HCG or an ultrasound to really see my uterus. So people don't really take it that seriously. I think that's changing, but I do think it needs to be, the part of every gynecological visit. You know, we certainly in the U.S. have this idea, and not everyone does this, but we do believe that having your annual pap smear and gynecological exam is important. And so that is a conversation you could be having with your gynecologist every year. Is this year the year that you want to start thinking about your family? Do you want to think about freezing your eggs, which is not a guarantee, but something that's possible? Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about parenting by, you know, as a single parent by choice? And where are you? Do you want to get an AMH test? You know, unfortunately, a lot of people still get outdated tests that aren't wrong, that aren't accurate. And so they really don't have accurate information. The AMH test is really good with an ultrasound. is a good predictor. It's not a guarantee, but it's a good predictor of what your fertility is going to look like. And you need to keep tabs on it. And so women have in the last several years, you know, since the 60s, we've had such progress in making ourselves known in the world of business, of industry, of so many places, of law, of finance, of medicine. And so women are really, when I was a kid, there was no such thing as a female doctor, right? Those just didn't exist. So things have changed a lot. Yes, I never met a female doctor in my life. When I was a kid, it was, you know, men were doctors. That was it. So things have changed, fortunately. Yes. What needs to change now is that we're not just thinking about preventing pregnancy, which we need to really be thoughtful about in relationship to the issues that we have. You know, the abortion laws in this country is really disastrous. We need to kind of go back to that. But we also need to think about how we can preserve our fertility, how we can get pregnant, what our plans are. We're going to go to graduate school. We're going to have a career, whatever we're going to do with our lives. If part of that life is going to include parenthood, how are we going to prepare for that? So we need to think about, even for people who are transitioning, if you're transitioning, you need to think about, should I freeze my eggs, right? Or freeze my sperm. So those things are really important to think about. And we really need to be having those conversations, and our doctors need to be having them with us.
Yes.
And that has to start young.
Yeah, you have to start young, right? Because again, like you said, in high school, all I remember was to not get pregnant. I actually thought if you move too close to a guy, I thought if you were too close, you know, it could potentially happen.
Yes, they cough on you and you'll get pregnant.
Yeah, right. You know. So, and then like, what? You guys are not telling me the truth.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely, we need more awareness, more education. And all, you know, so many things you said, because you just don't know. You're just living life. You just, as a young girl, even now, you, like you said, now you have female doctors. You're young, you just want to achieve so much. You want to go to college or university if you can. Maybe do your postgrad. You just keep trying to achieve so much. And of course, because you see that stuff in the media, maybe a 50-year-old or 55-year-old just had a baby. You think, well, you know, that's possible. My grandmother had the baby at 45 or 50. You think, yeah, sure, why not? So that means I can as well. But you don't realize that perhaps there was much to those stories than what you read in the magazine. So knowing,
and maybe she was trying for a decade.
Exactly. So you don't know.
You don't know, right? And, you know, it's hard because we're all, you know, as children, you know, lots of girls will play, or people with ovaries will play dress up and, you know, think about themselves as being parents and having a baby. And then we get our period and we're reminded every month, this is what our body does. Oh yeah, this is what my body does. This is what my body does. And so you just kind of assume that when you're ready, it's going to happen because this is what my body does, right? And so that's just going to happen. And then all of a sudden it doesn't happen. It's crushing. And, you know, fertility is infertility issues are very unique in that not only do we have loss, and, you know, when you have loss, you go through the experience of grieving, right? Your grandparent dies and you feel sad. And maybe you think about them on their birthday and you cry. And then eventually you just think about them on their birthday and you don't cry anymore. And maybe you feel a little sad, but it starts to fade over time, right?
Yeah.
We have that grief with infertility, but we also, on top of that, very often have a drop in self-esteem. And in that way, it's very unique. And that level of that type of depression is very unique to fertility treatment. It's seen in very few places. We see, you know, some people have this experience, cancer patients, but in infertility treatment, we very often feel like a failure. We feel damaged. We feel like there's something wrong with us. And so it really, really affects our self-esteem in enormous ways. And it's so important that we really get educated young so we don't see ourselves as responsible for our infertility.
Yes, that needs to change.
Yeah.
Globally.
Yes, globally.
So I hope people listen.
Yes, everybody with ovaries, I hope you
listen. And people would listen, and people that are in the power of the position of influence will start making those changes. I remember actually when I got married, I called the fertility clinic in the second month. I was like, oh, I had sex last month and I didn't get pregnant. And they're like, what? Just 1 month? No, you need to try longer. So I was so clueless. I thought,
nobody told you.
You know, why shouldn't it happen? It should happen as soon as I have sex, unprotected sex.
Right, just like that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. If I knew what I knew now.
Yes.
So, final question, Lisa. Thanks so much for your time today. Final question for anyone listening, for individual or couple, still trying to conceive and exploring donor conception or other options, any word of advice or encouragement?
Yes, I think that, and I say this very often on social media, that some of the things we're talking today about, Ola, are about self-esteem and about self-recrimination and about how people feel so badly about themselves when they have infertility. They feel so badly about themselves if they don't have the perfect story kind of wrapped up in a nice bow for their child. If they feel like in some way they're not managing fertility treatment well, or they haven't, you know, eaten non-toxic foods, if they haven't, you know, if they're eating sushi or deli meat or whatever. I think people can be so hard on themselves, and it's such a problem because it prevents you from so many things in life. It prevents you from moving forward. It prevents you from choosing the right donor. It prevents you from so many things. And so I think it's really, really important to get help and to get assistance, because sometimes, and I talk about this 5-step process in choosing a donor in my book, sometimes we don't even realize that we're stressed about something, and our stress is causing us to make decisions that are not right for us. And so I think ultimately we really need to think about, is this decision the right decision for me and my family? Not just, does this feel right at the moment? Does it give me stress relief, or does it make me feel better right now? But is this really the right thing for me? Is this in my best interest? And I think that that is a question that we need to ask ourselves regularly as we go through this process, because sometimes our heads aren't on straight when we're going through this. We feel, you know, dysregulated. We feel out of sorts. There's so many moving parts, and we have to deal with our family members and our partners and ourselves and our losses. And all at the same time, we're feeling crummy. So I think in that state of mind, it's really helpful to have somebody steer you in the right direction and to help you understand, when you go through each step in the journey, am I making the best decision for me?
Well said, Lisa. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Ola. Thank you. And for anyone listening who's not following Lisa on Instagram, please follow her at the Center for Family Building. Your examples and the way you teach and convey information is so helpful. I remember just checking your page today, and I saw something in my head on the 4th of December or around that time where you talked about the train track and looking at the time. And I laughed. I was like, oh, that's me, right?
We all do that.
Well, you're so right that it doesn't matter. Sorry, you say it.
No, go
It doesn't matter how long you keep looking at the train track, but it's not going to make the train come faster. If it's due to come at 7, it's going to come at 7. So if you're there from 6:30 and you keep on looking at it till 6:45, or you know, it's not going to come any faster. So why not enjoy now? And I thought that was just amazing.
Yeah. Right. And that's another experience, right? That's triggered by our emotions. We're so stressed. We want that train to come. So we keep looking down the track because we think it's going to make it come faster, but it's not, right? So if we were in a calmer place, maybe we would spend that 15 minutes like catching up on our emails or calling a friend or whatever. But instead, we're so focused on trying to make that train come faster that we spend all our time looking down the track.
Yeah. I loved it.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lisa, for your time today. I mean, you have such a wealth of knowledge. It seems like you're the fertility education we all need and support that we all need. So thank you for all that you're doing and what you keep doing to support the trying to conceive community and to let people know their options. Because again, everyone's situation is unique, different situations, and they all need different potential solutions. So thank you so much for what 100%. You're doing.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so look forward to having you again in the near future. All your details will be in the show notes. And yes, if you're not following Lisa, please visit on Instagram. And she's on TikTok. She's everywhere.
Everywhere.
All social media, YouTube, everywhere, Facebook. She's everywhere available to support you. So thank you so much for all you're doing, Lisa. And do have a wonderful day. We look forward to and weekend and happy holidays.
Thank you. Same to you, Ella. Good to see you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Fertility Conversations podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at Fertility Conversations. If there are any topics you would like to have discussed, please send an email to fertilityconversations@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Thank you again for listening. Take care of yourself and do stay hopeful.